Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our coverage of PSEU's virtual member forum. And on the last day, one of the fine keynotes was from Visa's Oliver Jenkin, and he talked about all sorts of payments trends, COVID impact, and the economy, all sorts of good stuff. But in this particular clip, Oliver talks about five things that COVID impacted our last 12 months, especially when it comes to payments and spending. So check it out.
At Visa, we saw 3 to 5 years worth of behavioral change that we had forecasted seeing getting pulled forward into today. That is a massive change into how consumers and businesses are behaving. That's a really big deal. You can see it in the numbers here, where e-commerce growth throughout the pandemic is over 20% throughout the whole period, where in-store growth is still negative. What's interesting is that the behavioral change occurs across all consumer segments, whether you were just moving into online purchases for the first time, whether you were making purchases online, but now you've expanded where you do it and how much you do online, or whether you were pretty fluent in online purchases and now you've just gone all in. Regardless of your starting point, regardless of where you started, all consumer segments have gone deeper. And as they've built that habituation and that muscle memory, they've liked it. So we think a lot of this shift in e-commerce online purchase will be permanent as people stick with what they've begun to really enjoy. And then finally on this slide, e-commerce in real life, IRL, is here to stay. Buy online, pick up in store, click and collect. All these things that consumers have gotten used to and that merchants and sellers have gotten used to providing, we think a lot of that will stay with the efficiency that it brings. So a massive shift forward in e-commerce that we think literally has pulled 3 to 5 years worth of behavioral change forward and we think is here to stay. The second of the five trends that I wanted to talk about is the fact that even though a lot of spending has shifted online, people are still going into stores. And when they go into stores, they want a clean, touchless, secure way to pay. And so as a result, the pandemic has resulted in a significant shift to tap-to-pay payments, contactless payments, where you simply tap your card or tap your phone at a point of sale to complete a transaction. You can see that in Canada, it's almost 80%. In Europe, it's over 80%. In Australia, it's 98%. Across all of Asia, over half of transactions are tap-to-pay. The United States was the last market to move, but we've really accelerated. Right now, 1 in 10, slightly over 1 in 10 in-store transactions are done with a simple tap, and we're making great progress. Over 300 million contactless cards exist in the market right now. 268 of the top 300 merchants accept tap-to-pay. 23 of the top 25 issuers in the United States are issuing contactless cards. This is becoming the norm around the world for how people pay in a store. Outside of the United States, 2 out of every 3 transactions that take place in a face-to-face environment are a tap with a phone or a card. And finally, on this slide, it's worth noting that the preponderance of these taps are with a card, not with a mobile phone. There's significantly more card taps, and it's growing at a significantly faster rate. Consumers are increasingly using cards as their tap-to-pay mechanism. The third COVID trend is the extent to which debit is driving this recovery. Since the pandemic, spend in the United States on debit cards has averaged over 22% growth, where credit has been shrinking throughout the whole period. And to some extent, this isn't surprising. Some of the key drivers are the fact that there's been really strong non-discretionary spending during the pandemic. And non-discretionary spending, required spending, is disproportionately done on debit. I'll say more on that in a second. Strong e-commerce growth has helped debit as well. If you're buying things online, you can't take a $10 bill and try to jam it into your phone to make a payment. You've got to use an electronic payment mechanism. That's helped grow debit. Debit is always preferred during periods of economic uncertainty. Consumers tend to spend what they've got in their account rather than borrowing to make their purchases. We always see that during a downturn, and that's part of what's driving debit as well. There's certainly been an element of cash is dirty, and so people would rather make an electronic payment than use cash. Right now in the United States, 62% of all transactions under $10 are made using cash. But with simple tap-to-pay technology and people with an aversion to cash, a lot of that is now moving to debit, which is driving these numbers. And then finally, of course, there's been a stimulus bomb, where government stimulus has gone into people's accounts and people have spent that. If they haven't saved it or paid down debt, what they've spent has been largely on a debit card. So that's what's been driving the debit growth. But I will say credit will return. And I'll say more on that on this next slide, where we talk about discretionary and non-discretionary spending. You guys know this as well, but non-discretionary spending, required spending, has done extremely well and held up despite the pandemic and the downturn. Discretionary spending has really been hit. Travel, restaurants, entertainment, etc. Discretionary has really taken the hit. Now, again, in many situations, this is common during an economic downturn. People keep spending what they need to spend, but any optional discretionary spend, there's a pullback. That always happens in an economic downturn. But it's been exacerbated by the pandemic restrictions. The ability to expend on discretionary elements like travel and restaurants and entertainment has been restricted by the fact that you're unable to do so given the health restrictions. We do believe this year that discretionary spend will rebound as restrictions lift. And as that discretionary spend rebounds, it will be driven primarily by credit card spend. We do believe, and what we've seen in other markets that have opened up, as discretionary spend returns, the non-discretionary spend still holds up. So this is an added burst of spend that people have pent up purchasing and interest in actually spending, doing it, but it doesn't necessarily hurt the non-discretionary spend trends. So we're hoping for there to be a bump in the back half of this year. The fifth and final trend I wanted to mention, which again, you are all familiar with, is the massive impact on travel. Again, you all know this, but take a look at these numbers. Airlines down 74%, hotels down almost 50%, car rental down almost 30%. These impacts are unprecedented. You compare them to other downturns and the impact on travel, which also usually pulls back during any downturn. This is significantly more stark. If you even look at the downturn that followed the September 11th attacks, where there was also a fear of traveling, this impact is significantly worse than what we've seen in time past. This is truly unprecedented. In terms of when it will come back, I wish we knew, but I will make a few observations. First of all, consumer travel will recover before business travel. There's no question about it, and we're already starting to see it happen. Consumers want to go see their friends, their families. They want to go on vacation, and they've actually got the financial means for the most part to go and do it. As pandemic restrictions begin to lift, consumer recovery will happen before business, as many businesses start thinking about how successful some of these virtual meetings were and how it could replace business travel. So consumer travel will lead. The second point here at the bottom is that domestic travel will recover before international. We'll see more short-haul flights. We'll see more car rentals. We'll see more trips to the local beach as opposed to, you know, trips to the Olympics or, trips to Europe. Domestic travel, short-haul, will recover before international. And cross-border will take its time. The last data that we looked at the end of the year said of the 217 countries around the world that reported data, 117 of those countries had completely or partially closed borders. Of the remaining 100, the vast majority had required testing and or quarantine. It's very difficult to consider cross-border travel if you've got that amount of friction. So until vaccines roll out in a material way and travel corridors begin to open, we think that that cross-border international travel will still be on hold. But as it does open, and as we're starting to see some corridors open, like US-Mexico, we're seeing great recovery when it does happen. So again, major impact on travel. We think long-term business travel will take a while to recover. We think consumer travel will come back relatively quickly as soon as pandemic restrictions lift.
Thank you very much for that, Oliver. And stay tuned for more coverage of PSCU's virtual member forum here on CU Broadcast.